This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures yesterday, Thursday, on the Board of Trade were lower by 3 to 4 cents in corn, lower by 6 to 7 in wheat, down by a penny in oats, but higher in soybeans by 1 to 2 cents. First off, we'll take a look at your corn futures. After trading Thursday in the red, the front month futures for corn closed off the low of the day, but they were still 3.25 to 3.75 cents lower. The USDA data showed that 1.089 million metric tons of corn bookings from the week ending the 12th. That was 11% higher for that week and 38% higher than the same week last year. Sales were near the top end of pre-report expectations, with just 130,000 metric tons previously announced to an unknown destination. The top buyers were Mexico and Japan. China purchased 174,700 metric tons of corn on the week, bringing their marketing year commitments to a record 10.949 million metric ton. Chinese corn commitments are 31% of the total at 35.256 million ton through week 11. For Milo, USDA showed 117,893 metric tons of sales, mostly to the PRC, who purchased 131,200 on the week. South Korea purchased 132,000 metric tons of option corn, though it might be primarily sourced from the U.S. Moving on to your soybeans, they had rallies off their lows, and the Thursday session finished fractionally to 1.75 cents higher. Soybean meal futures ended the day $1.20 to $1.50 lower. Soybean oil futures were 27 to 35 cents higher in the front months. The weekly export sales report showed 51 million bushels of soybean sales for the week ending last Thursday, the 12th. That was above analyst expectations and 18% larger than the same week last year. China alone counted for 76% of the total, with 30.5 million bushels. China's accumulated soybean bookings for the marketing year to date are at 55.8% of the total. At 28.61 million metric tons, soybean meal bookings were reported at 182,074 metric tons for the week. Soybean exports for the marketing year high of 317,739 metric tons. Accumulated soybean meal exports were at 1.418 million metric tons. That's 3% ahead of last year's pace through the first 7 weeks. Soybean oil bookings were above pre-report expectations with 45,132 metric tons sold for the week ending last Thursday, the 12th. That was down from last week's multi-year high since May of 2016, but still 15% above the same week last year. The domestic wheat futures market gave back Wednesday's recovery and closed the session in the red. Chicago wheat was lower by 5.25 to 7.75. Kansas City wheat lower by 8.5 to 9.75. Minneapolis wheat down by 4. Wheat export sales from the USDA's weekly data release were disappointing at 192,389 metric tons. That was below the range of pre-report expectations and a 26-week low. Wheat exports were at 270,472 metric tons, and the Philippines were the top destination there. So recapping your grain futures from yesterday, Thursday, off the Board of Trade, corn for December at the close Thursday was lower by 3.25, 422.5. March corn down by 3.25, 427.25. May corn down by 3.75 Thursday, 429.25. January beans were higher by 1.75, 1177.5. March beans gained 0.75 cents, 1175.5. May beans up 1 penny at 1173 Thursday. Chicago wheat for December was down 6, 591.75. March wheat down 7.75, 598.75. May wheat down 7.5 at 602.25. Oats for December down 0.25 cent, 297.25. March oats down 1 penny at 312. May oats gained 0.5 cent, however, at 315. Soybean meal for December down $1.20 a ton, 393.70. January bean meal down $1.50 a ton, 392.30. And soybean oil for December gained 35 cents, 38.81. January bean oil up 30 cents, 38.51. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for yesterday, Thursday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Thursday's reported grain price and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois cut grain price were mixed on Thursday afternoon. in northern West Lloyd Country. Grain yields quoted shell corn bids down 1 to 3 cents at 395 to 415. Soybeans are steady to 2 cents higher at 1128 to 1151. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids steady to down 3 cents at 403 to 424. Soybeans are 2 to 3 cents higher at 1141 to 1184. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were steady to a penny lower at 390 to 443. Soybeans are 2 to 4 cents higher at 1126 to 1186. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 2 to 7 cents higher at 1175 to 1193. Basis was steady to up 5 at 315 over the January. High pro soybean meal on a truck basis offered at 395.70 to 403.70 a ton, down $1.70 a ton, with basis unchanged at 2 over to 10 over the December. Illinois corn processor case corn bids were down 3 cents at 418 to 445, with basis steady at 522 over the December. Illinois River barge flooding elevators coated it, produced corn bids down 2 to 3 cents at 417 to 428, with basis unchanged up 1 at 600 to 5 over the December. Soybeans ended mixed at 1159 to 1173, with basis steady to down 3 at 19 under to 5 under the January. East St. Louis barge flooding terminal placer produced corn bids 2 cents higher at 448 to 450. These elevators raised their soybean prices 8 to 10 cents. Quotations at 1094 to 1096. Off week closed down 6 cents at 601 to 602. Milo ended the day 3 cents lower at 483 to 498. And contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 395 to 4.25. Soybeans 1128 to 1160. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at 410 to 430. Soybeans at 1155 to 1185. In the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 413 to 451. Soybeans at 1162 to 1205. And that concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock futures report on this Friday morning. Thursday trading left hogs and cattle both lowered across the board. First off, the fat cattle futures were $2.02 to $2.62 weaker. Feeder cattle futures closed Thursday $1.75 to $2.02 lower. November feeders expired yesterday at $136.77. Tuesday's feeder cattle index was 17 cents lower to $137.38. USDA reported Thursday cash trade was light and sporadic using the full $106 to $110 range. Cash sales in beef were mostly at 172, with some at 170 and 171 reported. Wholesale box beef prices were higher Thursday, widening the choice to select spread to $23.81 a hundredweight. Choice boxes were up another $1.86 and selects were up 27 cents. Traders are expecting the USDA to show lighter October placements, down 9% from a year ago in today's cattle on feed report, with overall on feed numbers higher by 2%. The weekly export sales report showed 46,377 metric tons of beef bookings, which is the highest for any week, not counting government shutdowns, since the week of March 15, 2012. An additional 14,122 metric tons of 2021 beef was also booked on the week ending last Thursday, the 12th. USDA estimated the week's federally inspected cattle slaughter through yesterday, Thursday, at 478,000 head. That's 6,000 head more than last week and outpacing the same week last year by 5,000 head. Lean hog futures closed Thursday with front month losses of at least $2.10. February contracts were the weakest, giving back 285 to post a 10-week low. Pork cutout figures also weakened on the day. With just 9 trade days for the new contracts, the nearbys all posted a live contract low during the triple-digit drops yesterday. The lean hog index for Tuesday the 17th was another 41 cents weaker to 69.32. USDA's national average base hog price for Thursday afternoon was at 58.48, down only 4 cents. USDA's national pork carcass cutout value is $1.54 higher Thursday afternoon to $79.22, led by a $9.50 gain to hams. USDA's export sales report showed pork bookings were at 28,905 metric tons on the week. That's a 3-week low for pork sales and 47% below the same week last year. Federally inspected hog slaughter through the week through yesterday Thursday was estimated at 1.955 million head hogs. That compares to 1.923 last week and 1.968 for the same week last year. So we're ahead by 32,000 head compared to last week, but behind by 12,000 head compared to last year. So recapping your lower livestock futures from yesterday, Thursday off the Board of Trade, December live cattle down 240, 108.25, February live cattle down 262, 110.52, April live cattle down 242 on the close Thursday, 114.20. Feeder cattle for November finished down 25 cents and expired yesterday at 136.77. Jan feeders, the new front month contract, were down by $1.75 yesterday, 135.55. March feeders down $1.95, 134.95. Lean hogs, December down 210, 63.70. February lean hogs down 285 at 63.05. April lean hogs down 255, 66.22. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Thursday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday afternoon livestock report. Started the National Daily Direct Hog Report. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass traded 4 cents lower in a range of 51 to 59.75 with a weighted average carcass price of 58.48. From the Illinois Direct Sow Ports, large sow price were steady with good demand for moderate to heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded $32 to $36, 4 to 5 weight at $35 to $39. 5 to 6 weighted 38 to 42 and over 600 pounds, $41 to $45. On the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts country buying points were steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $39 to $42. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts had totaled 31,017. In the direct cattle trade, in the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers and libations traded 105 to 110, and on a dress basis at 170 to 177. Choice heifers and live bases trade at 107 to 110 and on a dress basis at 171 to 172. From the National Daily Pork Plant Port, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 355 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was 79.22, which is $1.54 higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice select beef carcasses are trading higher. Choice carcasses were 237.70, which is $1.86 higher, while select carcasses were 213.89, which is 27 cents higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 119,000, compared to 120,000 last week, 115,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 491,000, compared to 483,000 last week, and 484,000 one year ago. That includes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
It's coming up on 6:25 on this Friday morning from FM 106, Part 1 of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by Farm Credit Illinois, by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield, and by Pros Drainage. 50 degrees at the Weather Center. Time now for Part 2 of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by the CNB Bank and Trust, with 17 locations to serve you, and by Stein Seed. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now in Ag News here on your Friday morning to round out this last full week before Thanksgiving. Political uncertainty and a second coronavirus wave are creating a perfect storm against the lame duck Congress passing a virus stimulus bill or individual agency spending bills. The political divide on Capitol Hill is growing with much narrower margins next year in the House and Senate, two Senate runoffs in Georgia in January, and a continuing stalemate in talks on a virus stimulus bill, even as COVID infections are soaring nationally. American Farm Bureau's Andrew Walmsley says the lame duck Congress faces a mountain of leftover bills on agency spending, defense, water projects, even grain standards reauthorization.
There's also, you know, a lot of focus in the Senate on getting some last-minute appointees through for this administration. And there's no talks on stimulus, to my knowledge, at least between McConnell and Pelosi at this point.
But there's still talk of attaching some stimulus to any must-do spending bill to keep the government open.
There's an opportunity. You know, we're going to be right there. We've continued to make our point to, you know, our friends on the Hill and the leadership that there are definitely a segment of farmers that have not received aid up to this point, that more aid will be given as we potentially go into a second wave as winter approaches.
A stalled Senate bill included $20 billion more for agriculture, and Walmsley says some producers who got no help through CFAP 1 and the now open CFAP 2 program still need relief.
Those producers have definitely been struggling. Those that have had to retire their herds early, some contract growers and others that just weren't eligible. We need to make sure that there's some assistance flowing to them, and that's what Farm Bureau will continue to work, whether it's in this Congress or the next Congress. Unfortunately, politics are at play.
And that leaves great uncertainty on spending in areas bigger than agriculture as party leaders wrestle with how much power they'll have in a new Congress and whether to act now or wait till the dust settles from the perfect storm of election politics and COVID-19. In latest trade news from around the world, following up on an earlier story on Brexit we had this week, Brexit negotiations are now suspended after members of the European Union's negotiating team tested positive for COVID. However, Reuters says officials are still working remotely to get an EU-United Kingdom trade deal on the books that would enter into full force less than 2 months from now. Finland's European Affairs Minister says the talks could still succeed, and a comprehensive deal can be done by the time Britain's transition out of the European Union wraps up on December 31st. Negotiators told Reuters in a phone interview that the negotiation stage is critical. They say the time pressure is huge, and both sides haven't given up their faith that the deal can be done. The chief Brexit negotiators are the EU's Michael Barnier and the UK's David Frost. Barnier says on Twitter that the teams, quote, will continue their work in full respect of safety guidelines. Some of the European Union member states, like the Netherlands, France, Belgium, and Spain, have asked the Executive European Commission, which is negotiating with Britain on behalf of the bloc, to update emergency plans for a possible no deal on Brexit. France's representative on the Commission says Britain must accept fair competition rules for companies or be shut out of the EU's single market of 450 million consumers come next year. Back in news here from the United States, and a bit of sickening news when it comes to the coronavirus. Details are now coming out about a wrongful death lawsuit against Tyson Foods at its Waterloo, Iowa processing plant. The suit alleges that during the initial stages of COVID-19 back this spring, the company ordered employees to report to work, while supervisors were privately wagering money on the number of workers who would be sickened by the virus. The Iowa Capital Dispatch says the lawsuit alleges that Tyson Foods is guilty of, quote, willful disregard for workplace safety. In a written statement this week, Tyson said it was saddened by the loss of any Tyson team member and sympathizes with their families. The company won't comment on specific aspects of the suit, but it did go on to say, quote, top priority is health and safety of its workers, and they've implemented a host of protective measures at the Waterloo and other facilities that meet or exceed CDC and OSHA guidelines for preventing COVID. At least 5 Waterloo, Iowa plant employees have died from COVID. According to the local county health department there, over 1,000 workers at the plant, or more than one-third of the total workforce, contracted the virus. In news from the USDA, they're reminding dairy producers that the deadline to enroll in the Dairy Margin Coverage Program for the calendar year 2021 is quickly approaching, coming up on December 11th. The USDA's Farm Service Agency opened the DMC sign-up back in October to help producers manage economic risk brought on by milk price and feed cost disparities. Quote, 2020 has been a very challenging year for ag producers, and we don't yet know what next year will bring. That's from FSA Administrator Richard Fortice. He goes on to say that dairy producers should definitely consider coverage for next year, as even the slightest drop in the margin can trigger payments. The DMC program, first created by the 2018 Farm Bill, offers a reasonably priced protection to dairy producers when the difference between the milk price and the average feed cost or the margin falls below a specific dollar amount that's selected by a producer. To enroll, producers must certify with the FSA that the operation is commercially marketing milk, sign all the required forms, and pay the $100 administrative fee unless the farm qualifies for a waiver. Producers can select the $4 catastrophic level of coverage with no premium fee. They can also choose to buy up coverage where the premium is based on the margin triggers, between 450 and 950 on 5 to 95% of their established production history. And in other news from USDA, at least the Farm Service Agency side of USDA, they've restored the previous definitions of terms like active personnel management, significant contribution, and related phrasing in a rule regarding farm program subsidy eligibility and payment limitation. FSA Administrator Richard Fordyce again says the change is more of a correction. He also says these revisions mean that the members of a family of a farm operation are not subject to the more stringent management requirements applicable to a farming operation comprised of non-family members that were established in the 2014 Farm Bill and further supported by the 2018 Farm Bill. USDA also says that the more restrictive definitions only apply to farming operations comprised of non-family members that are subject to a limit in the number of farm managers seeking to qualify as actively engaged in farming based on a contribution of active personnel management alone, as it was established in the 2018 Farm Bill. During an interview, Fordyce says, quote, "It wasn't our intention to bring family farm entities under the more restrictive provisions. It wasn't Congress's intent for us to do that either." The Hagstrom Report says the correction to the rule will be published right away in the Federal Register and goes into effect immediately. In Today Friday's featured Ag Story, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue made an appearance at the National Association of Farm Broadcasters' virtual annual convention this year, and there was a lot to discuss. Trade has been a hot topic of conversation over the past 4 years, especially as it pertains to the trade war with China. Perdue says America might not feel as successful as we've been when it comes to dealing with China.
The factual numbers show economically that farm income minus government payments has increased 33% over the last 4 years. I think a lot of times while the President Trump supported that when we were having the calling out China and many people wanted to talk about the trade war actually going on there, we'd been in a war that we didn't realize we were in for 20 years.
He says the U.S. approach to dealing with the unfair trade practices of China has yielded some positive results.
Now we see the benefits of the trade policy. So sometimes there has to be some pain. Obviously, these transfer payments were there with MFPs 1 and 2, CFAP 1 and 2 with COVID to help support people where they could continue their livelihood and not get so much in debt that they couldn't get out. And the good news is now we're seeing those prices we had hoped to have seen 4 years ago. Actually, when you look at farm income, I was kind of surprised myself to see it literally bottomed in 16 and has risen each year since that period of time.
In addition to the Phase 1 deal with China, Perdue says there are other world trade wins to talk about, such as the USMCA.
We've modernized it from a technology perspective and solidified those number one and two customers there on the northern-southern border for a long time. Bob Lighthizer, our trade ambassador, got an enforceable agreement. The Japan agreement was, again, there was concern about withdrawing from TPP. But why should the largest customer of these countries be treated the same as 11 other countries? We got a better deal that way. A Korean deal was settled as well as in the Indo-Pacific from Thailand and Vietnam and others have also increased. So I think we've laid the platform for increased trade.
Rural broadband access is another vital issue that USDA is working on also.
It's vital. It's no longer a luxury. When we began, President Trump, the day after I was sworn in, signed the executive order on rural prosperity. And as we studied that for 180 days with an interagency, about 22 different federal agencies, connectivity was one of the main things that we came up with that could really help rural America, including farms and farmsteads. It's no longer acceptable for 20% of the nation here to be cut out of connectivity of electronic commerce. That's just not acceptable.
And Secretary Perdue goes on to say that broadband access is critical for rural America in many ways.
These reconnect programs that the President has directed us and Congress funded to get these connectivity out here with broadband, literally to the farmsteads, precision agriculture, e-commerce. Farmers are great entrepreneurs. They can market themselves all over the world if they have connections. Certainly COVID has shown us with distance learning. What are the country kids going to do when school's not in? How are they going to learn if they can't be connected.
And again, that was Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue, who spoke with NAFB President and former WSMI Ag Director Rita Frazier at the NAFB Virtual Annual Convention. And we'll move right along here on your Friday morning to the latest State of Illinois Ag News. As part of Pork Power, partnering to fight hunger here in Illinois, the Illinois Pork Producers Association, along with the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and the Illinois Soybean Association Checkoff, presented the Central Illinois Food Bank in Springfield with 4,200 pounds of ground pork this month. Since its inception back in 2008, Pork Power has generated over 916,000 pounds of pork. That's enough for over 3 million meals for families throughout Illinois. Farmers and partnering commodity groups give a combination of whole hogs for processing and monetary donations all year. Near the end of each calendar year, the IPPA turns the remaining funds into ground pork and then divides it among the regional food banks in Illinois for the holiday season. Due to the current restrictions in Illinois, more families might be spending the holidays in multiple places, and the IPPA hopes that this pork donation will come in good timing for those extra household meals. The ground pork for this donation was processed at Trasky Meats in Springfield. And moving from ground pork to live hogs, here in late November, the USDA's National Ag Statistics Service will begin serving farmers here in Illinois and across the country to estimate hog and pig inventory. The survey will determine inventory as of December 1st. NAS will mail questionnaires to farmers near the end of November. Farmers will return the survey back by mail or online, according to Mark Sloysener, state statistician for Illinois. USDA and Sloysener encourage farmers to respond online at the website agcounts.usda.gov, as that it's secure, efficient, and saves cost. Farmers may be contacted by phone during December if they've not returned their survey back by mail or online, and the survey shows that hog inventories in Illinois have been rising since 2013, Sloysener went on to explain. The results will become published in the Hog and Pig Report that'll be released on December 23rd, and it'll be available online at nas.usda.gov/publication. In the latest state ag news, when it comes to the coronavirus, progress has been made on two COVID vaccines, one from Moderna and the other from Pfizer. The key question is distribution, specifically to rural underserved areas like many of ours here in mid-Illinois. Governor Pritzker was asked about that.
We are not leaving any part of the state out. I mean, I am very focused on equity. That is vitally important to me, and that means equity for rural families, for people who live in communities that have been left out and left behind with regard to health care, and equity to making sure that we're getting first to those who are most vulnerable. So we're that plan, you can take a look at what we did for the federal government, although I have to say they asked us so early in the process that when you don't know what the vaccines are that you're delivering and you don't know whether you have to keep them in cold storage or whether they're room temperature, it's very hard to put a plan together that meets every requirement of every type of vaccine. And by the way, there's likely to be more than one vaccine that is distributed, and that means there will be more than one supply chain. But we're, trust me, focused on rural Illinois.
Pfizer is reporting its coronavirus vaccine is more successful than originally thought. An earlier evaluation reported the vaccine was to be more than 90% effective. However, a final analysis shows it's to be 95% effective. The company earlier this week said it will seek emergency use authorization from the FDA within days. And in our last state story, this time from the IDNR, firearm deer hunting season kicks off today across Illinois. It's the first weekend for firearm deer hunting, which is the most popular season of the year. State Department of Natural Resource spokesperson Rachel Torbert has this reminder.
For any of our firearm seasons, we want to make sure people have on the correct requirements, which keep them safe, and that includes blaze orange or blaze pink hat, and then upper outer garment that has at least 400 square inches of that color. And it's just something so that other hunters in the area can see you. Hunters do still need to report any deer harvested, and they can do that through our online service or by calling our telephone check-in system, and you'll be asked a few questions about the deer that you've harvested, sex, where it was harvested, things like that. So you still have to do that by 10 p.m. the day you harvest the animal.
Rachel also explains that CWD check stations will be closed this year due to COVID-19. The second half of the firearm deer season runs December 3rd through 6th, and you can visit huntillinois.org for more information online. And that wraps up your ag and outdoor news here on a Friday morning. But remember, you can always send us your ag news by email at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So again, for this Friday morning, November 20th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.